Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, another Baseball America Prospect Podcast. We are a little bleary-eyed. We are cranking away on top 10s. I think Jeff's working on Astros right now. I'm working on Tigers. But before long, we'll actually have all the National League top 10s. If you have not been over to baseballamerica.com, National League top 10s, all there. We are now rolling on the American League. By the time you are listening to this, Jeff's Blue Jays will be up. My Rays went up as we recorded this on Tuesday. Red Sox up. We will be done with the AL East next week, right after Thanksgiving, onto the Central, onto the West. You're going to turn around. We're going to have 300 scouting reports up, and then we'll turn around, finish up the prospect handbook, and then post up. We'll have 900 scouting reports, actually 1,200, because we will go to 40 eventually for all orgs. I want to go to 120, but I think Jeff's the only one willing to go along with me on that, you know, like, but you know, someday. But great to see everybody. Glad you are. Hope everyone, as you're listening to this, probably a lot of you traveling. Hope you have safe travels. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. If you are in the U.S., you know, our Canadian and other listeners, I apologize that I did not wish you Thanksgiving on Canadian Thanksgiving or days like that. But, Jeff, great to see you. Today we are talking on our Fix It series. We are looking at the Chicago White Sox, a team that I think you can say, no one's going to ask the question, wait, they need fixing? Because obviously, if you are listening to this, you remember the White Sox 2024 season, which is a season that needed as much fixing as ever. And that's where we're going to start this, which is, I don't think I'm telling anything that any White Sox fan doesn't know. But Jeff, the good news is that, you know, you always, the night is darkest always before dawn. Rock bottom has already happened here. They're on the way back up. I'm not saying that the playoffs is right around the bend or anything like that, but it's not going to be as bad as it was 2 years ago anytime soon, right? Please, I hope.
I don't think so. I mean, JJ, they won a whole 60 games last season, all right?
Monster. One of the biggest improvements in Major League Baseball.
Exactly. You know,
that was a 19-win improvement.
Yeah, there you go. Pretty substantial. But I think when you look at this team, even from that 24 team that was all-time bad, but we've talked about maybe wasn't the all-time worst team. That might be the Rockies from last year. I think there's some exciting stuff going on at the top. A lot of young players, 26 years old or younger. You know, Louis Robert opts in for another year. We'll see where that situation goes. If they get a full healthy season and he goes into the free agent market and fools somebody. Or if, you know, he's a player that they can trade or on the trade deadline that, you know, he's healthy and performing well enough that they can actually get some return for him. That will be interesting. But I think you look throughout this lineup, there is some positive stuff that you can kind of say about all these guys in terms of hitters. Even Lenyon Sosa had a pretty good season last year. Brooks Baldwin is really a bench player, but I think he's a nice bench player, a switch hitter with some speed, can play a bunch of different positions, not going to hit for a ton of power, but can get on base and, you know, put the ball
last year. I'll have to say that he did the opposite last year. He had the 400 slug, but the 290 OBP.
I think that was an outlier season. Frankly, just haven't watched a lot of Brooks Baldwin over the years, but yeah, I think, you know, he was probably looking for a little bit more power. Found it in some regards. I don't know if that was a worthwhile trade-off, but I think, like I said, at least like as a bench player, I think there's some worthwhile stuff you can say there. And by and large, they've done okay with pitching over the years. I mean, it hasn't been as bad as it maybe should have been. It's still a lot of number five, number six, number seven starter types in this rotation, frankly, though. Some interesting bullpen pieces, though. Mike Vassell, Jordan Leisure, and Grant Taylor, I think, are all really, really interesting. And there's some other good stuff. They traded for Chris Murphy, Wilkerman Gonzalez. A lot of former Red Sox in this team, too. Those two teams have been obviously making some trades over the years. So, yeah, I kind of look at this, and I think, like, where we're starting from, they don't have Paul Skeens or Connor Griffin like the Pirates did. But from an all-around holistic perspective, it's not terrible. It could be worse, is what I'm saying.
So here's the crazy thing, to take a little bit more of a step back before we take a step forward and look ahead. The other crazy part about this is the White Sox actually had a rebuild, and a pretty significant one, at the end of the 2010s, right? And there was a debate at that time, you know, is this the best farm system in baseball? We never had number one. We had number four. Braves were number one. I feel very good about that. The Braves did have a better farm system at the time. The Braves did have more success in that farm system. But they also, I do feel like the White Sox were a little bit of a victim of timing. They're kind of, their system kind of peaked right in time for 2020, which is kind of that weird year. They were 35-25. They went to the playoffs, but it's that weird year, quick wild card exit. You don't know how good that team would have been over 162. Then they won 93 the year after that. Like, and at that point, if you said you still had Moncada, Tim Anderson, Luis Roberts had just showed up, there was pitching here, like you would have said, core here is in their 20s, other than Abreu. Like, this is really going to go, you know, go well. It should go well. And Moncada started getting hurt. Robert had some good years, but not that matched up with the other guys' years. Tim Anderson surprisingly hit a cliff where he went from being really good to not, you know, really a regular in a pretty short period of time. And so here we are. They had to completely restart. And I would say, I've said this on other podcasts, but like, they went and they promoted Chris Getz. And I do think that when you promote from within and you're trying to rebuild the structure of an organization, that's a really challenging job, because you're having someone who's already there say, we have to make a different approach. We have to take a different approach. But I do think that Chris Getz has really kind of modernized some things here. You mentioned on the pitching side, they obviously went out and brought in pitching experts, I would say, from the outside of Brian Bannister's and people like that. They've really kind of made some adjustments, made some improvements. It doesn't mean it's perfect or anything like that, but we are seeing some changes. That kind of ties in then, Jeff, to which is like you hit on it. So they did have a successful year, as far as much more successful than the year before, where they were playing, I would say, a slew of position players who were in their last chance or their only chance to really get significant playing time. But that's where this gets a little tricky, which is, okay, looking at their big league team before we get onto the farm system, who are the core players here? Who are the players that you say, this is who you're going to build a successful White Sox team around? That's a long pause.
I don't know if there are any. Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of look, Kyle Teal is a nice player. You know, we think there's some more offensive upside there, potentially. The defense at catcher wasn't great in his first year. But we'll see.
Nor Cuero.
Yeah, Cuero, I think, is worse defense, even worse defensively.
Cuero was as bad a framer as anyone in the non, like, Augustin Ramirez division.
I think the blocking with Teal is really what the issue is, but that's the kind of thing that can get cleaned up. So I think we're looking at Kyle Teal, and while I don't think Colson Montgomery is a franchise type of player, where I thought there was maybe a chance for that when he was in the lower levels, and he had really good plate skills and power, and like, more power will come. He kind of was out in the desert for 40 days and 40 nights in Charlotte for a year plus. And then the quality of contact showed up. The approach is still pretty bad. You hope he maybe makes some gains in terms of the swing decisions that, like I said, had previously been there. And usually don't see them bottom out like they had. And the bat to ball that used to be there. That stuff can tighten up a little bit, because he has showed it before. You know, this isn't a guy that walked into pro ball with a ton of swing and miss issues or bad swing decision like issues. He wasn't a player like that. So the fact that the power and the quality contact has really shown up, and it's plus quality of contact. You kind of dig into barrel rate and all that sort of stuff. You're even kind of surprised that he might have maybe underperformed some of his numbers from a year ago, which I think is a little shocking. Like his expected WOBA is just under what he actually produced. But it was a 14.4% barrel rate, You know, he had a 114.5 max, really steep launch angles, you know, 44% hard hit rate. So he's hitting the ball hard. The swing decisions, like I said, are okay. They started to get a little bit better over his second half.
Is the contact rate going to stay at a level to allow him to get to that, really?
Yeah, I think that's what the issue is. I mean, the zone contact's 82%. It's not awful. You know, it had been 88% in AAA this year. So I think some of it is going to come down to those swing decisions because he really makes a very low amount of contact outside of the zone. There are some guys that run a little higher zone contact rates. He runs his a little lower. So I think it's approach stuff that can get cleaned up and in turn that will probably mitigate some of the swing and miss risk to a point that his profile could be really stable. This could be a guy that hits 250 with 30 home runs and more walks. Like, This could come into fruition. I think it was a really positive development for him that the quality of contact was as good as it was this year in the majors. That's positive to see as a guy who's going to be, what, 24 years old heading into next season.
I would say the other thing I think was a very positive development is he's a better defender than what we thought he was going to be coming into the big leagues. Like, you know, there was a lot of talk when he was in the minors, especially when he's in the lower minors, like, is this guy going to move to third base? And no, this guy is like, he's a solid shortstop at the big league level right away, above average, really, as far as a lot of the metrics. And that's really the positive development. Okay, got an interesting little comparison I want to throw out for you. And we'll do that right after this quick break.
Hey, for all the parents out there with teens, it's more hectic now than ever.
Cash App's going to help, not hurt.
With the Cash App card available to teens 13 to 17 with sponsorship by an eligible parent or guardian, every transaction triggers a real-time notification for you to see, empowering your teen to practice independence while giving you peace of mind by keeping track of their spending. You can also manage everything directly from your own Cash App account without having to switch between the two. With the Cash App card, you and your teen's balances receive 24/7 fraud monitoring, and if something ever feels off, you have the ability to lock their card right from your phone in just one tap. For a limited time, new Cash App customers can earn $10 if they use code FAMILY10 in their profile at sign up and send $5 to a friend within 14 days. Terms apply. Cash App is a financial services platform, not a bank. Banking services provided by Cash App's bank partner. Prepaid debit cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC. Direct deposit and promotions provided by Cash App, a Block Inc. brand. Visit cash.app/legal/podcast for full disclosures.
So, Jeff, I just got done doing the Rays top 10. If we had had this conversation a year ago and we'd have talked about Carson Williams and Colson Montgomery, it would have been like, well, Carson Williams is a better shortstop prospect than Colson Montgomery. Both have some questions, but Montgomery's a better defender. I mean, Williams is a better defender. Montgomery might have a little bit more power, but they both have significant power. Williams has made more contact. Here we are 12 months later having this conversation. Montgomery's gone off and done it in the big leagues. Williams makes the big leagues and did not do it, hit some homers, but also struck out 42% of the time. I bring this up because I actually, the more I thought about it, like you said, I do think that Montgomery has a little bit of a better base of offensive skills because the contact in zone is better. And that's a real problem for Williams. And that's a bigger problem to me than a guy who, like you said, Montgomery's is don't chase. Williams is figure out how to make more contact in the zone. I would rather have the don't chase as my next up on my to-do list than the figure out how to make more contact. I don't think there's as much adjustability to Williams' swing, but it does bring me up. I want to bring it up. It's like, this is where I do think he could be a cornerstone guy, but there's also still a lot of volatility here, is that we're now saying with Williams, like bottom of the order bat who could hit for some power, you know, but probably the hit tool is going to be a real question for him. I do think Montgomery still does face some significant hit tool questions. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if he had a 2026 where the power is still there. The defense, you know, takes a slight step back because he was really good defensively, but still really good. But then you say, okay, the contact rate went down. The swing decisions weren't great. And so you turn around and it's like, okay, he still walks some, but it's a good season. It's a solid season, not a great season. But that's, to me, like, I kind of look at it. One of the catchers in him kind of have to be core here if this team's going to be successful, because The other guys that we're talking about are more, I would say, complementary pieces. Now, that kind of, as we kind of step into the bigger picture, when you look at this, obviously Andrew Vaughn last year, like what he did with Milwaukee's not great, that you had this guy and, you know, you basically jettison him and, oh, like the Brewers are like, magic wand, here you are. You're now the player that the White Sox hope you would be for multiple years. That's not a great one, but again, that happens to a lot of teams. It's not something where that's unique to the White Sox, that a player doesn't click for them, he clicks for someone else.
Holiday season is upon us, and if you're still searching for gifts, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, so every gift feels special and thoughtfully chosen, like the MLB Perfect Catch coaster set, which can turn any table into a home run display. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone and every occasion, from moms and dads to kids and teens, from birthdays to the holidays to anniversaries, you'll find unforgettable gifts that are anything but ordinary. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Every purchase is a chance to choose something remarkable and feel good about where your money goes. With every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Now we're going to look at the farm system. This is a better farm system, but is there enough here? Where do you think that there are still areas that have to be improved, have to be kind of filled out for this team to get back to playoff contention down the road? That's what we're trying to get to when we talk about fixing these teams.
Yeah, I think it's going to start with a couple of these higher end pitching prospects finally clicking, or somebody in this top 10 finally clicking. And I think you can look at Schultz down year, Hagen Smith down year. There's still some upside with both of those guys. I think both of them could be rotation pieces. Maybe they're not the super high-end left-handed duo we thought they were previously. They're still pretty good. I'm really high on Tanner McDougal. I think that he's potentially a top 100 type of arm. It's really good stuff. Strike throwing improved a lot this year. He's looking good at higher levels, gets weaker contact. I think overall, he's a really exciting pitching prospect. And then I think you look at Christian Oper, and it kind of gives him this trio of good lefties with good stuff. And he has some of the best starter stuff in the minors, full stop. One of the hardest throwing left-handers in the minors in all of professional baseball. I think, you know, maybe hitting on one of those guys in a big way, or two of them is like mid rotation type of arms, could go a long way to kind of establishing this. Also frees up a little bit of money to go out and maybe fill in some gaps on the position side, because I do think they need a couple of top of the order bats. I think you'd like to see a more dynamic leadoff hitter, and they need sort of like the guy, you know, to steal a phrase from Reggie Jackson, but they kind of need the straw that stirs the drink here, because I don't think it's going to be Colson Montgomery or Kyle Teal. I think they can be your two hitter or your you know, four or five hitters, fine, but you need that 3-4 hitter that's going to really sort of push everything, right? That makes everything sort of work. I think we saw that with the Blue Jays with a guy like Vladimir Guerrero Jr., the Red Sox lineup when Roman Anthony was in that mix. I don't know if they have that guy right now. I think Caleb Bonnemer has a lot of upside. I think he draw, at least for me, a lot of comparisons to Gunnar Henderson in terms of their skill sets, their size, the types of players that they are, some questions, third base, shortstop. But he's probably the great hope here in this system right now that he can sort of become that. Otherwise, they'll have to go out into the free agent market and try to find someone like that, in my opinion.
That kind of ties into another big picture question here we're going to hit on a little bit more. That is, when you look at this pitching, as you said, there's more here than there was. That's the most important thing. I do think also we got to give them a lot of credit. You mentioned Mike Vassell, Shane Smith, Mike Vassell. The White Sox did in the Rule 5 what you dream of doing in the Rule 5. They literally added, I don't know how often you could say this, and I say that as someone, two people here on this podcast have studied the Rule 5 about as much as anyone out there in the world, but you do not see a team say, hey, we got a primary reliever in year one and our front of the rotation ace in year one of a Rule 5 draft. And they did that. Shane, now, in the long run, I don't know if you want Shane Smith to be your ace, but he is 100% a guy who now you pencil in as being a key part of your rotation for years to come. I would say with Vassell, like, that was a great year. I'm a little more concerned. Like, part of the value of it is he threw 100 innings as a reliever. He had three starts, but he was already a reliever. That's incredible in modern day parlance. You know, like, you don't see that anymore. Mark Eichhorn, Mike Marshall kind of tipped their, well, not Mike Marshall. Mike Marshall's like, if you don't throw 200 innings out of the pen, then what are you doing? But Mark Eichhorn, guys like who used to do this, where you used to see guys throw 100 plus innings of relief work. It's not something you see nowadays. I just worry there's going to be a little bit of return to, like, because that's hard to do. And you look on the minor league side, you kind of hit on this. It's really about one of these guys on the pitching side. Like, I think, like, Noah Schultz is the guy who you could very plausibly say, when you look at his age, when you look at how he's looked at his best, when you consider the fact that often these prep first rounders don't really hit their full stride until year 6 or 7 after they were drafted. If it all breaks right, he could be an ace. But it's going to be more of kind of throwing quantity at here and hoping that something sticks than it is that you have slam dunk. Like, this is not, we have Trey Savage, who already done it in the big leagues, you know, already now, or, you know, Bubba Chandler. It's a little bit more hesitancy, isn't it? That there's the clear, like, this is what the rotation is going to look like in 27 and 28.
Yeah. You know, it's very difficult to predict what direction Schultz is going to go, you know. At least I really, really struggle with trying to project how long it's going to take for all of that to click. It might take 3 years and then it's really, really good. But some of these longer limbed sort of left-handers take a while. And I think just based on what we saw with Hagen Smith, though the reports in AFL were better, it's still
there's real reliever risk here.
Well, a little concerning. Yeah, I think reliever risk or just maybe number four starter, which is not what you wanted to get at the top of that draft in particular, where there were some pretty good players, some of those impact guys that went after Hagen Smith that you could have gotten for maybe even less money. Someone like, I don't know, Connor Griffin.
I mean, that's one that I feel like that we will be talking about that. He didn't go nearly as late as Mike Trout did. But I just feel that there will be retrospective stories for years that are like, how did this guy last that long in the draft? You know, that's coming. Yeah, I think that's coming. But as you said, that the other thing that does jump out here, though, is that there are, you know, more of these now, more names now that could kind of, like, you know, you hit on a couple of them, like, If a McDougal or a Christian Oppo or, you know, kind of takes another step forward, right? Like, you know, they've got kind of relief arms here as well. I don't want to forget about some of these guys who, you know, kind of they've had guys with injuries and all, like, we don't forget about the Drew Thorpe exists, things like that. But I do feel like that it does feel to me like for all of this to sync up on the pitching side, it's still a little nebulous to me that you're going to get this group to the rotation you need to have without bringing in some outside, without killing it in the Rule 5 draft for a second straight year, which, by the way, would be impressive. Or, you know, hitting it on a fast-moving guy in the other draft, that secondary little draft that we have in July every year, you know, that does happen to produce a few more players than the Rule 5 draft. But, you know, in that draft, like, if they really hit there or something like that. But I would say on the position player side, the question is who's the most important position prospect? I think you've already named him. Yes, I know that Braden Montgomery was, you know, prominent guy they got in the Garrett Crochet trade. Caleb Bonnerer, if this team is going to, a year from now, be really on the cusp, it's because we're talking about Caleb Bonnerer, top 10 prospect in the game, right? Like, that's the, I'm not utterly crazy to think that that's a possibility question, isn't it? Like, it could happen. It's not saying it's going to, but Caleb Bonnerer could be that kind of guy, couldn't he?
I think so. You know, I think when you look at this guy, now granted, most of it was in low A, and I know there's been some questions as to the quality of low A play over the last couple of years, but I think you sort of put it into a vacuum, his age, his experience level, age to level was perfectly fine. You know, it wasn't like he was old for the level or more advanced, but showed really good underlying plate skills, had one like rough month in June, but otherwise was really good throughout the rest of the season. Shows plus underlying power, pretty good angles, you know, good swing decisions. He's going to stick in the dirt, whether it's shortstop or third base, kind of remains up for some debate, can run a little bit as well. So I think just like a really good all-around player with athleticism, remaining projection, and a really nice foundation of hit tool, power, and approach, which matters a lot. I think when you kind of marry those three, more often than not, you're looking at major league average hitters or better.
Okay, if he's the key guy, what's your feeling of optimism that Braden Montgomery can be? We said they need middle of the order bats. Can Braden Montgomery be that middle of the order bat?
Yeah, I mean, switch hitting power is very rare, right? And I think that he has 30 home run underlying power, can get on base, can probably be that number four, number five, number six kind of guy, right? Just in terms of a guy who drives and runs, hits the ball hard. You're not going to bank on him for, you know, hitting above 250, 260 probably. But I think overall, like, yeah, like you can feel pretty confident. You can put Braden Montgomery into a corner outfield spot, and he's going to give you reasonably good defense with, you know, a plus-plus arm out there. It can make all the throws. Can run a little bit, hit for some power, will get on base. There'll probably be some swing and miss as well. But could be like a, you know, 240, 330, you know, 490 to 520 slug kind of guy with 25 plus home runs. So I think he can be like a higher end complementary piece, like your third best hitter on a playoff team. I think that's a reasonable expectation, but if he's the, you know, he's your best hitter, your best power hitter, I don't know if that's necessarily such a good thing.
Okay. So let's just kind of put this all together then. I would say, like, okay, we'll start with the optimistic approach. If, as you said, like, okay, I think you've laid out a little bit of a possible everything breaks right in 2026 avenue here, which is, let's say, okay, for one, Louis Robert has kind of a healthy, hey, he's not dead yet. This look at your reminder of what he could be, what he's been in the past kind of season. And that doesn't mean that you then long-term, it means that you then spin him at the deadline, you know, and say, great, we're going to bring in some additional reinforcements with that. Colson Montgomery improves, like you said, some of the underlying skills that he has demonstrated at times in his minor league career, earlier in his minor league career, where you say, okay, then that is kind of one of the three big bats you're looking for. Because then you have a shortstop. You could be really talking about a four warp type player there, because you're talking about a player going to give you defense, going to give you power, get on base, not great batting averages, but enough, right? We find one of these starters. Again, we just laid out three, four, five possibilities. That takes a step forward in 26, to where, okay, you're going to see a little bit of regression. Not every one of these guys who had a good year last year, Miguel Vargas or Chase Meadroff, or, you know, some of these guys, let's just be honest, one of them may take a step forward and one of them may take a step back, where you go, oh, okay, because that's just normal, right? Same thing we're talking about with the Marlins, where we're like, a lot of players had good years there. That's good. But at the same time, if you're counting on all these guys to have it again, maybe a little worrisome. I think all that could happen. Then that would have them, I would say, that gets them to 75 wins maybe this year. But then that would get them to the point where next offseason you are saying, okay, now how do we – this is a team that has shown in the past they can't spend. They're in Chicago. You know, okay, yes, they're not the big team in Chicago. They're not the big revenue team, but they're in Chicago. All that could be then pointing towards a 27. The flip side of that, though, is and I want to see what you thought, like, but this one just feels like it's perched on something a little bit more precarious here, is what I would say, right? Like, I know that Pirates fans are understandably skeptical, but I look at where Pittsburgh is right now, and barring injuries, it's hard for me to imagine that I'm not getting better, because Connor Griffin's of the world make you better. Paul Skeens of the world with additional help make you better. Deep pitching staff of guys who have already reached the majors, all that. What do you think the chances are that this team is, you know, a 85 win team? That's a modest level, but can get to 85 wins in the next few years. Or what do you think are the chances that this is a rebuild that could kind of, hey, put 2024 far behind them, but could kind of peter out where it's like there's just not enough ammo here to get them from, hey, it could get them from 41 wins to, let's say, 80, but it's going to have trouble getting them beyond that. Is that a real risk here?
I think it's a real risk. And I think it's going to depend on how those pitchers kind of bounce back, particularly Schultz. If Smith can bounce back a little bit, and is more in line with the reports that we heard in AFL. Okay. Like, I think that's totally reasonable. If you have, you know, a multi-pronged, you know, all these pitchers, the four guys that we laid out, if they all click and Caleb Bonimer turns into that Gunnar Henderson type of guy, I think it's reasonable to think that there is a chance that they could be an 85 plus win team. It's probably going to take 2 years, I think, at minimum. We'll see what they get in the draft over the next couple of years. If there's any other pitching developments, because I think that while Smith and Schultz took a step back, I feel like throughout this system, it got a little bit better. And we do know that, like with Bannister in charge, there is some, you know, organizational development structure there that probably works a little bit. And they're getting a little bit more out of position players than they've gotten in a while. So, like, I think there's some positives here, so I don't want to be totally negative, but it's going to take some guys in the minors turning into the stars in order for this to be like an 86 to 90 win team by 2028. And I think that's what the real concern is, because that's tough. When we were talking about the Orioles a few years ago before they won 100 games, it was kind of banking on the prospects all clicking. And they might have had a little bit more at the major league level in terms of like a Cedric Mullins and Santander and, you know, some of those.
A good bit more, I think, actually.
Yeah, you know. So we just have to see how this crop of prospects sort of matriculates and what they look like once they're in the big leagues and settled in. Cool. So I would put it at probably 70-30 that it's not going to exceed 85 wins in the next couple of years, but there's still a chance, better than it is for the Rockies and some of these other teams we've talked about. And I have a little bit more confidence that they might be willing to spend enough money, which the Pirates potentially won't. So kind of weighing the pros and cons.
That's where I would say, that's the key thing I would say here. I mean, I know it sounds easy to say with the Pirates to say spend more money. And we've said like that the Pirates absolutely should spend money now to kind of get this team where it needs to go. I think the White Sox are one that they've shown in the past, like, okay, this year is the understandably, there's no need to spend the money yet. This is the year to still figure out where your strengths are and where your weaknesses are. But if you're going to get this team where you need it to go, at some point, it's going to probably need a push, right? And that push would be, hey, we need one more starter and we need a fill-in-the-blank third baseman, first baseman, outfielder, whatever it is. And you say, okay, so we're going to go out and get those two guys on the free agent market and not in the, hey, this guy was terrible last year, but we're hoping that he's, you know, a pillow contract that'll make good. No, I'm talking actually bring in somebody. Again, you're the White Sox. This is a team that running $150 million payroll should not be a crazy number by any stretch of imagination. They're nowhere close to that right now. So there's room for that potentially. And this team is not one where the stars, the young stars they have are going to get expensive real soon. So, you know, there's a foundation here to maybe get somewhere. But I think that our summation of is how you fix this, they're moving in the right direction. But at the same time, it's not fully established yet to where you could comfortably say, yeah. Like, again, we've had teams over the years where you look at it, it's like, yeah, they're really bad now, but it's going to be hard for them. Like when we talk about those Seattle teams that we looked at in the early 2020s, right? And you're like, whoa, look at what they're doing on the pitching side now. Oh, they've got Julio Rodriguez, who's a star. We didn't know that Cal Raleigh was going to give them a second star. But like when you have that, then all of a sudden you're a playoff team. We're not there yet, but we've just laid out hopefully some ways that this could. If we're talking about Caleb Bonimer, top 10 prospect next year, that'll help, you know? If we're talking about, hey, yeah, Braden Montgomery's ready to be a 25 home run guy, even if it's, you know, again, not the number one guy in the lineup, but the number two, the number three guy. There's ways to get there. There's, which we could not have said. If we had tried to do fix it on the 20 going into the 2024 season White Sox, the answer would have been, you can't fix this. This is not fixable right now. This is abandon hope, all who enter here. And that is where they were. They're not there now. So we'll see, you know, is there anything else that you're looking at before we wrap this up, Jeff? Anything else that if you're a White Sox fan or just a fan of rebuild, something else that you would look for, like this is something to watch for in 20s going into 26 or in 26 going forward with this team?
We didn't talk about either of these guys, but I think, you know, potential breakouts from Billy Carlson and Jaden Fowski. Both guys that, depending on who you talk to, have some big fans. Fowski is a guy that I think can really hit. There's some questions about, you know, where he ends up defensively, but there's power, feel to hit. Carlson's a guy with a lot of defensive ability, big athlete, a lot of projection. Questions about what he's going to be with the bat. If he can make some developments in this sort of dead period between the draft and when he steps on foot on a field in minor league spring training, we've seen this happen over the last couple of years where guys make drastic swing changes and improve. I don't think he's going to be Connor Griffin, but strong athlete, really good defender. If the bat improves enough, that could be another thing, to, at least in the farm system, to watch for and say, okay, now we have maybe these two guys emerge. This top 10 looks really good to the point that those two guys kind of taking a step forward and proving they can hit in pro ball, maybe could push this top 10 into top five, top three conversation, especially if the pitchers bounce back. I think there's like the makings of a really good top 10 in farm system here. Just some things have to continue to go in the right direction in 2026.
There's one other thing I'll say that if we're talking about this team a year from now, getting ready, winter meetings are coming. Draft lotteries held at the winter meetings. Team with the highest odds right now. And by the way, because of the way it fell, even higher odds, really normally you have these couple of teams at the top who have the highest odds. Those got dropped off because of not being eligible, which raises the White Sox odds even more. Better than a 1-in-4 shot that the White Sox have the number one pick. Rock Chulosky, adding him to this team. Like, you know, Chulosky is, we don't know. It's still far away, but looks like the number one pick. If you added him to this and we're talking about that, that would be another guy where you'd be like, okay, now you've got Colson Montgomery, Caleb Bonimer, Rock Chulosky. Then we're starting to talk, you know, at that point.
That's your Adley, right? Like, that's the Orioles rebuild coming to fruition with, like, the number one pick and Adley Rutschman being the guy. Now, granted, they could have gone with Bobby Witt Jr., some other guys too. But, yeah, I mean, it affords you a lot of ability to pull guys down to the second round as well, because we seem to always see an underslot number one. Maybe Chulosky could be the one that says, nah, I'm not going underslot, guys.
I mean, under slot, sure, because no one ever seems to get full, even like the Paul
Skeens. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of money. Yeah.
Right. But much like Paul Skeens is like, but I'm not taking a big discount, because you know what? If I go down, I'm not going far. Like, usually how you do that, your plan is like, the risk is if you don't go one, you could go five and look how much less money. Rock would be able to say, I'm not falling. You can not take me, but then the next guy is going to take me and I'll get the draft bonus. Like, and by the way, if I'm sitting at two, I'm like, yes, we will build our draft around you. We're good. You know, you'll make the money that you would have made at one. We're good with that. Like, you're not going to be able to bargain that down much. I will just say that. But so White Sox fans very much have a reason to pay attention this December, because that could be a potentially franchise altering bounce of the ping pong balls. So, again, this is one of those fun years. There are years where, like, it's a really good draft, but there's not a clear number one. This year, this is a really good draft, and it does feel like there's a really clear number one. Those years are really fun. So that's our look at the White Sox and how they potentially could return to prominence. We'll see. But again, there's some positives here to watch for. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.